Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and there is a Wall Street spectacle taking place in Washington right now. The CEOs of the four biggest too-big-to-fail banks are testifying together before a special commission set up to investigate the causes of the financial crisis. It's called the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, not coincidentally. The witnesses are Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, Jamie Dimon, CEO of JPMorgan Chase, John Mack, CEO of Morgan Stanley, and Brian Moynihan, CEO of Bank of America. What a lineup. So we will play some extended excerpts of the testimony that's been taking place, and then we'll talk about it. Among the questions that we are wondering about, how much will these CEOs accept blame for their company's roles in crashing the economy? How will they justify the big 2009 bonuses being announced this week while they're raising fees and denying credit and refusing to restructure mortgages to their customers? And what about their too-big-to-fail status, which only tempts them to take excessive risks again, knowing the taxpayers will be obligated to bail them out again? Will they volunteer to give that up? Now, in this first excerpt, which is about 3 minutes long and took place just a short time ago, we will hear the chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, Phil Angelides, questioning Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs. This begins with a question from Mr. Angelides.
My point was you had a view of the market as you continued to sell the securities. I guess one of the questions I'd ask you is, how do you go to the rating agencies, with whom I dealt with a lot as treasurer? And how do you persuade them to give many of the tranches the highest ratings, AAA, at the same time that you have credit information,
Chairman,
that leads you to believe that, in fact, those securities may fail?
Chairman, I have to, in another point, the predicate of your question, we are not necessarily, I know if you had looked into Goldman Sachs, we were not controlling our risk. When you listen to the testimony that's come by, the biggest problem that institutions had was the accumulation of risk. We weren't working. A market maker doesn't manage its risk profile because it likes housing or doesn't like housing. Those are separate. We have various pockets of Goldman Sachs that like a position or don't like. What we do is risk management. Because we had this risk, because we were accumulating positions, which, by the way, we acquire from clients who want to sell them to us, we have to go out ourselves and provide and source the other side of the transactions so that we can manage our risk. These are all exercises in risk management.
Well, I'm just going to be blunt with you. It sounds to me a little bit like selling a car with faulty brakes and then buying an insurance policy on the buyer of those cars. It doesn't seem to me that that's a practice that inspires confidence in the markets.
Every
I'm not talking about your own positions.
Every
I'm talking about betting against
of an
the
asset
securities.
Here is an institution, okay, probably professional-only investors dedicated, in most cases, to this business.
Representing pension funds who have the life savings of police officers,
these
teachers.
Are the professional investors who want this exposure. Let me ask you,
okay,
in the current market today, things are
swirling. Let's move on. Because of time.
I think these are important matters. I think this is one of the most critical questions that are revolving around here.
And then I have a question to follow up on this.
No, I understand. We are sitting here today with people commenting in the press, gee, the equity market is being driven by more bubbles because of the liquidity in. Others are saying the equity market is right and we're in the recovery. No one really knows. Yet people are coming to us as a market maker. I want exposure to the equity market. I don't want exposure to the equity market. We have to make sure the products do what the products say, that they're honest, that they're disclosure, and there are laws that do this. But we are an institutional firm, and this is the highest part of the institutional market. Even today, by the way, people are coming to us for exposure to these very instruments, not at 100 cents of the dollar, but 8 cents on the dollar, because they think it's going to be worth 12 cents, and other people are saying it because they think at 8 cents it's going to go to 4 cents. That's what a market is, and our role as a market maker creates the liquidity.
I do know what a market is, but I want to ask you this question. Did you always disclose to every investor that, in fact, you were taking the contrary positions, or you just, or just yes or no? Was that consistently disclosed?
It's the position doesn't foot. We were selling as a principal. When we sold, we were right. Selling something that we had owned.
Then let me ask you one final question.
They owned it, and we didn't.
That exchange just moments ago, pretty heated exchange between Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, and the chair of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, Phil Angelides, questioning Blankfein and the CEOs of the three other top too-big-to-fail banks. That's still going on in Washington. We'll play some more excerpts as we go along. Joining us now is Diane Brady, senior writer for Business Week. Diane, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be here.
And that exchange, I guess, was premised on Goldman Sachs itself selling stocks that it was advising its clients to buy. Is that what I was hearing?
I mean, basically, one of the things that has people outraged, outrage of the week, I guess you could call it, was the revelation that they were both convincing the credit rating agencies to support something that they were, in essence, turning around and shorting. So what Blankfein is saying, as you heard in a very kind of heated way, was we were simply hedging our risks. That's what we do. But in essence, to the outsider, it's a say, you know, you're telling people to make one bet and you're profiting if it by making another. So it sort of gets to the heart of what makes people so angry about this crisis, the sense that Wall Street was winning while everybody else was left holding the bag.
Is there an issue there, or is this posturing by Phil Angelides?
I think there is an issue, and I think it's something that has to be addressed. And you see one of the, and there will be many, but one of the punching bags that comes out in this whole thing this morning is the credit rating agencies. People are saying, you know, we outsourced, we trusted them. The truth is, you know, that they were very much hoping to get AAA on some of this stuff, and then to know that they were, in essence, aware of the fact that this was not as good and that they were hedging their bets is something that makes people angry. So I don't think it's simply posturing. I think it's one of the fundamental issues, of which there are many, that have to be addressed by this commission.
We'll play another clip now from Commissioner Heather Murren questioning Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs. This is on the question of AIG, that bailout, that bankruptcy in effect, and the fact that Goldman Sachs got paid 100 cents on the dollar of their debt, apparently from taxpayer bailout money. As we were bailing out AIG, you would think that AIG's creditors would get something less than 100% of what they are owed. Some did, but Goldman Sachs got 100% of what they were owed. This is another source of outrage right now. And so here is Commissioner Heather Murren questioning Lloyd Blankfein on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My first question is to Mr. Blankfein. A question for you about AIG. Could you talk a little bit about when the government supported AIG and enabled them to close out your exposures to risk at AIG? Did anyone ask you at any point to take anything less than 100 cents on the dollar?
I never got a request myself about taking less. It didn't come up in the any conversation that I can recall. Subsequently, somebody in my organization who was going back and forth with some of the – this was after the AIG. This was a couple of months later at the time when they were closing out a portfolio called, I think known as Maiden Lane 3, told me that he got a question to the effect that at least contain the inference that he drew, would you be willing to take less? And he said he couldn't answer that question now himself at his level. And he then said it would never came back up again to him. And as I said, it never came back to me.
Did he further that question up the chain of command at your firm at any point?
I think he... I can say I didn't get it. I didn't get it. He might have told his boss.
All right, Lloyd Blankfein with the Inquiry Commission, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, Commissioner Heather Murren. Diane Brady, decode some of that for our listeners.
Well, I think the "not that I can recall" is always something that gets people's ears opening. I think basically the question here is another thing that has people outraged, as you said, is the idea that we poured at this point more than $180 billion into AIG, and you would think a company that was on the precipice of bankruptcy that some people would have had to take a hit, i.e. Goldman Sachs. It did not. We've seen a scandal this week about emails from Tim Geithner and such, basically saying don't disclose the terms. Everybody knows that the public would be angry to hear this. Basically, Blankfein is saying nobody asked me to take less than what I felt I was owed. And when it went to a minor employee, he essentially never heard about it. So I guess Goldman Sachs is basically saying, look, nobody asked us and we took our money and thanks very much.
Before we play a couple of more clips from the hearing taking place right now, take a step back for us, Diane. First of all, how extraordinary is this, that all four of these CEOs are kind of lined up there? I mean, I remember once upon a time when it was the heads of the tobacco companies raising their hand saying, no, we had no knowledge that our product caused cancer. And once upon a time, it was Mark McGuire and other baseball players raising their hands and saying, steroids? I don't know anything about steroids. So now we have Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, John Mack, the CEO of Morgan Stanley, and Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America, all there answering these commissioners' questions. How extraordinary is this?
Well, I think it is necessary political theater that has to take place given the public anger. But I think the tobacco comparison is a good one. That happened in 1994, and to my knowledge, tobacco is still a pretty lucrative and deadly business. So we didn't see a lot come out of that. And I think the big takeaway from this, we're going to see contrition. We've seen a little bit of hostility. You'd expect that. I mean, these are not passive people with small egos. But I think the real question is this going to be like the commission that we had actually during the Depression, which laid the groundwork for the SEC, which basically insulated the deposit and lending functions of banks from the trading? What people really want to see here is some focus on the root causes of what brought us here, and the notion that financial markets can police themselves. I think that's the real question. It's a lot of theater. It's extraordinary. But will we see results?
What do you think is the headline so far from the morning of testimony?
I think the headline, it's a good one. I think that there's certainly some contrition. There's certainly the sense, I like the not, it will not happen again in my lifetime. Of course, Lloyd Blankfein is the one everyone's looking at because Goldman Sachs is the one that has been vilified so much this year. But basically, these guys are saying, hey, we did what we had to do. We appreciate the public. Thanks very much. We give high marks to the regulators. Now leave us alone.
And I'm sure instead of taking their individual private planes, they all piled on a Bolt bus this morning. To go from
Lower
Manhattan.
Well, they came the night before. Nobody was going to get caught in the airport anymore, which has happened in the past.
Jamie, should we take the Bolt bus or the Chinatown bus? All right. Here's a clip from the hearing of Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. And to set this up, he's answering a question from Douglas Holtz Aiken, who's the former director of the Congressional Budget Office. He was also John McCain's economics advisor during the presidential campaign. Douglas Holtz Aiken asking the panel why the traditional structure of an investment bank failed to figure out the excessive risks that were being taken in the years leading up to the crash. And here is CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, answering the question. He says, even if you do everything right, you'll make mistakes.
I would say if you do everything right in business, you are going to make mistakes. And you really have to look at the continuum of how many, how big. Even if you do it right, you'll make some. Hopefully, they'll be smaller and won't be threatening to your institution or anybody else. And the process is very rigorous. You know, if you look at, we have risk, we have a separate pricing group. It's internal audit, external audit, and it's reviewed by the OCC and the Fed. I think when you have a chance to look at those things, you'll be pretty impressed at the diligence behind some of that process. As a company, we always did some stress testing because history tells you that things go bad in the markets, and you have to be prepared. That should never be a surprise. And you don't know exactly what's going to go bad or exactly what direction it's going to come from. When you look at a business, and it partially answers the question that the senator was asking too, we look at a whole balanced scorecard. So it's not, you know, if you are not financially successful, you fail. So it is obviously a sine qua non of doing business, but it is not the most important thing. So if you were running a business for us, we say, are you building a great company for the future? Will you be proud of it? Is it sustainable? Are you building better systems, better processes, better people, better training? So we look at the whole thing. It is never driven by one metric, and I think you can get make mistakes doing that. And looking back at some of the mistakes, I also think as a business, you have to look at what you did right, what you did wrong, and if you're not continually analyzing and improving it, you will not get better. So I've already mentioned the biggest mistakes we made in mortgage underwriting. Somehow we just missed, that home prices don't go up forever and that it's not sufficient to have stated income in home prices.
If you'd been doing, you had been doing stress tests prior to the crisis.
Yeah.
Did you do a stress test that showed housing prices falling?
No. I would say that was probably one of the big misses. We stressed almost everything else, but we didn't say home prices going down 40%. And that's now part of the stress test.
J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon with Financial Crisis Inquiry Commissioner Douglas Holtz Aiken. We are with Diane Brady, Senior Writer for Business Week. Diane, that's incredible to me. That is new information to me. And that the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase could sit there, and I realize he was expressing a little bit of contrition, but saying somehow we just missed the fact that home prices couldn't keep going up and up and up. What?
I know. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, it was an atmosphere of manic, leveraged risk-taking. There's no question. And I think we had this marriage of, you know, reckless easy money meets reckless lack of oversight. And I think that what they're saying is we didn't see it coming. You know, to be honest, people did see it coming. You had Alan Greenspan actually talking about mitigating the fallout when it occurs. The thing is, nobody expected that they would be the ones left holding the ball. It was called subprime mortgages for a reason. These were people who would not qualify for the regular 30-year jumbo mortgage. So I think that it wasn't so much a question that they didn't anticipate housing prices would fall. It was a question of when would they fall and could they make a lot of money before that event took place. Certainly nobody expected us to come to the precipice, but I think you're right. It's incredible to sit and listen to these incredibly smart, Wall Street mavens basically tell us that they could not envision a scenario in which housing prices would fall.
And when he said they didn't even stress test it, they stress test everything else, but they didn't stress test the housing investments. With your knowledge of big Wall Street companies, how unusual is that? How standard practice is it to do stress tests, which is testing out various scenarios of things move in different directions on major sectors of the economy? And how unusual would it have been not to do this with something as significant as housing?
Well, things ebb and flow. I mean, we always learn our lessons and then we go back and put the systems in place. And I think what's happened is we have had a decade basically of persistently low interest rates, and that fueled a housing bubble, it fueled a credit bubble. There was such easy money that you never really had to, pay the piper, so to speak. So I think that, yes, there should have been stress tests, but let's not forget, these were, you know, bets that were being leveraged 20, 30 to 1. People were making incredible amounts of money. And, Diamond, to his credit to some extent, was seen as being too conservative at some points, and the market was penalizing him for that. So people saw a lot of money to be made. I think there's a correlation somewhat to the internet bubble, but the damage here was much greater, and they just didn't know when the party would end.
When you say Diamond was more conservative than some, in other words, J.P. Morgan wasn't as invested as some of these other Wall Street firms in subprime mortgages?
They were not, and they got out earlier. So he actually pulled back on the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, a couple of years ago, people were basically saying, why are you not making the kinds of returns that we're seeing from some of your rivals, Bank of America, et cetera? So I think that obviously they put themselves in a bad way, but there's a reason why Jamie Dimon has emerged as one of the heroes from this whole event. We've seen, companies reemerge in a very different form, but J.P. Morgan Chase, to some extent, is the victor.
Let's play another clip from the hearing taking place this morning. And if you're just joining us, we're listening to excerpts from the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission in Washington, asking questions of all four too big to fail bank CEOs: Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs; Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase; John Mack, CEO of Morgan Stanley; and Brian Moynihan, CEO of Bank of America. And in this clip, the vice chairman of the commission, Bill Thomas, asks each of them, has there been a change in executive pay?
Okay, Mr. Dimon, in terms of the question that was asked of Mr. Blankfein, could you give us a before and after if there's been a change in the compensation structure? Have you changed your compensation after the quote-unquote downturn to require some equity time prior to receiving the...
Recently you saw the G20 and the Federal Reserve and a lot of people draw compensation principles, which we generally agree with. But we have always had the following principles: that senior people get paid a lot of their compensation in stock. It's generally been 50% to 75%, higher for me. You have to maintain ownership of that stock, 75% of it, as long as you're part of the senior management committee. We've had certain clawbacks. It's always been risk adjusted, so we look at the amount of risk you're taking before we actually necessarily pay that compensation. And we don't have things like special change of control, parachutes, special severance packages, things like that.
Mr. Mack?
We've always paid a large portion of our compensation in equity. We've increased it for the most senior people up to 75%, which they have to hold. The only thing new we've done, sir, is we put a clawback provision in now. So some of the bonus we will have access to up to 3 years. If a trade turns bad into the new year, we'll be able to go in and take that back. That's been the big change.
Mr. Moynihan, you've got a new position, but you're not new, so you can tell me about B of A.
We've had a tradition of paying in stock. Likewise, like Mr. Mack said, in our firm also for this year, we've instituted clawbacks to better match the duration of the risk. So something somebody does today, we can look at 2 years and actually claw back against their compensation.
And both of you said instituted this year. That means that's an ongoing change not just for this year.
It's part of our compensation scheme. But paying stock has been part of our compensation scheme for a long, long time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So the various CEOs of the big Wall Street firms testifying this morning on how their bonus structure has changed and pay structure has changed for top executives since the crash in the fall of 2008. We are with Diane Brady, senior writer for Business Week. And Diane, I want to give them a little bit of due on this one. I think the headlines this week have been a little simplistic in saying that these bonuses are going to be announced on Friday and they're going to be just as big as the 2007 bonuses at the height of the madness, and the bonuses themselves contributed to the senseless risk-taking that had gone on. But as I think we heard there, these bonuses are going to be delivered in a different way, so that instead of cash for deals made in the last quarter or the last year, and then it doesn't matter whether those deals go bad or even wind up crashing the economy in the future, they're going to be paid largely in stock options. They could be clawed back, as it was stated there, and it generally focuses them on a longer-term view of what smart investment is. Or am I giving them too much credit?
No, I think it has changed somewhat, and I think stock has always been a very, very big portion of compensation. But some people would argue that one of the problems is stock options, because that gives you an incentive to be trying to ramp up the price of your stock. So there are compensation experts out there who think that stock options encourage as much risk as cash does, if not more. But I think what has got people angry, and I think that this has been sacrosanct on Wall Street, and certainly at Goldman Sachs, that you get very well compensated for the work that you put in. So I think we have to understand that is the contract they have with their employees, and they're paying out their own money. They should be allowed to do that. But the issue people have is 10% unemployment on one hand, $18 billion in money being paid out to Goldman Sachs employees on the other. I think that's what has people angry. When you start getting into the minutiae of clawbacks, that's important, obviously, about risk-taking, but it's the optics in the public's eye that these guys know is what they have to manage at this point.
And we're going to wrap it up here and go back to get the latest on Haiti. But what's still to come this afternoon as these four CEOs continue to testify?
Well, I think we'll be seeing a lot more focus on the, you know, the contrition aspect. I think that we just started hearing about the credit ratings agencies. I have to, you know, tread carefully here because until a month ago we were owned by a company that had one of them, S&P. But, you know, basically I think we're going to be looking at what are some of the root causes. And one thing I'm curious about is I would love, frankly, to hear from people like Alan Greenspan, who was the master of the hands-off philosophy, which is that you simply do not regulate the markets. People coming out of this are looking for more regulation. Washington has said they are. I'd be interested to hear what these four guys have to say about that and really drill deep.
And, in fact, we had a caller who we don't have time to put on the air, Scott in Soho, but he was asking, why are we focusing so much on these CEOs? Why isn't Tim Geithner being called to account, among other things, because he was the New York Fed chief at the time that they encouraged AIG to pay back Goldman Sachs at 100 cents on the dollar?
Excellent question. Ben Bernanke, who, to my knowledge, still hasn't really acknowledged that low interest rates got us here in the first place. There are a lot of people I think we could call forward and ask questions. What people really want to say is, how do we avoid this from happening again?
Diane Brady from Business Week, now known formally as Bloomberg Business Week, since the one little Pac-Man came and ate the other little Pac-Man.
Big happy family.
Bloomberg Business Week's Diane Brady. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC will get the latest on the earthquake in a minute, and we can take more phone calls now from some of our Haitian American listeners. Are you getting through to anybody down there, and what are you hearing that people need? Also, just describe the situation if you are getting any firsthand reports. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for some of our Haitian American listeners right now. 212, we'll put you right on the air. 212-433-9692.